Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you listening to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us some feedback. Also, the Bald-Faced Truth podcast, it's brought to you by Shoe Mill, my favorite shoe store with locations in Portland and Salem and online at shoemill.com. Shoe Mill, where we put the world at your feet.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to the Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
My next guest is a good follow on Twitter. And last night, he was tweeting about UCLA, and I was like, what is going on? Ben Bulch of the LA Times is joining us. How are you, man?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
I appreciate you. I appreciate the work you do. You're doing a great job, and I love having you on, so appreciate you making time. What's going on with UCLA? Why can't you get some answers?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy, right? I mean, this all started about a year ago, in fact, when I was following up on some of the excellent work that you and John Wilner at the San Jose Mercury News had done, raising some legitimate questions about the Pac-12 under Larry Scott. And, the chancellor at UCLA, Gene Block, is essentially one of Larry Scott's bosses. So I wanted to get his take on what was going on and maybe some accountability for keeping Larry Scott in place. And I was told at the time that he referred all questions about the Pac-12 to the Pac-12, which I thought was a curious way to operate. I told his spokesman, that's like President Trump referring all questions about him to himself, which doesn't quite work. You need somebody else to kind of hold somebody accountable. So I kind of put that in the back pocket, and then, UCLA obviously is looking for a new athletic director now, and I wanted to just get some general thoughts about the qualities they're seeking. Dan Guerrero's been there for, nearly two decades now. Do they want to kind of keep this trajectory or go in a different direction? Not asking for, a list of candidates or anything like that, but just some general guiding principles they're following, and I was told that he would not speak to me. So that's what prompted my tweets last night.
Is there anything, like, has he been accessible up until this point, or is this just kind of what Gene Block has done?
Yeah, I'm not aware of him doing any interviews with the LA Times, certainly not in sports. I did see him at the Regents meeting where they approved the extension to Dan Guerrero's contract, and I've been told that he does meet with some people from the Daily Bruin occasionally and has some breakfast with students and things like that. But he certainly has not been made available to me. And what's disappointing to me is that, I got the sense that not only was he not responsive, but that his spokesman really didn't even pass along the request.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the responses were almost immediate. And I know that there wasn't a time to really make that ask. So, disappointing to have a gatekeeper who doesn't even really pass along a request.
I'll be honest with you. When I was reporting some of the Pac-12 stuff, I ran into something at UCLA that kind of raised an eyebrow, and now it makes more sense to me. I had done a records request for a record that I knew UCLA had. I knew that they had this copy of sort of their blueprint for marketing and sort of PR for the next year. I only knew it because I had received it in a different records request from Oregon State and UCLA. I saw UCLA was on the email. So I asked UCLA for the document, and UCLA said, we don't have it. And I said, sure you do. It's right here. And they never even responded. Like, they didn't want, they didn't want any part of it.
Yeah, I've gotten a lot of that, too, where, I've made what I think are pretty standard requests and been given kind of a laundry list of excuses for why they can't provide documents. So it's very frustrating, and there's not a lot of oversight for a public institution that's supposed to be accountable to the public. So it's kind of a scary situation, honestly, where you have to wonder, what information is out there that's not being shed light on.
We're talking to Ben Bulch of the LA Times. Gene Block is the president or chancellor at UCLA. He is part of the CEO group that is boss to Larry Scott, Pac-12 commissioner. There's been a lot of turnover Block and Ed Ray at Oregon State were kind of the holdovers, and maybe Michael Crow at Arizona State as well. Ed Ray is leaving. There's been some turnover at USC and other places with new presidents. Washington State's got one, too. How do you think that affects the Pac-12?
Well, you know, these are the guys that kind of set the agenda for what happens in athletics. And, you know, there's some thought that maybe the old guard was more deferential to Larry Scott than maybe some of the new guys. But, you know, there's also a power structure of who controls, maybe has more input or kind of clout. So, you know, the younger the Pac-12 leadership gets, the more turnover there is, I think the more susceptible to change that there's going to be throughout the conference. And, you know, frankly, there's a lot of people who would be happy with some new blood in high positions in Pac-12 athletics.
Does UCLA, do you hear about, you know, the financial troubles? Do you hear about the lack of exposure on television? Do you hear that rumbling from UCLA football? Are they happy with where the conference is, or is that even a talking point?
You know, it's not really a talking point right now. I think the from what I've been able to gather, they're relatively financially stable on the football front. They've got that new $75 million Wasserman Football Center. You know, they're paying their coaching staff more than they ever have. They're putting lots and lots of money into Chip Kelly's sports science program. So, you know, if they're racking up some debts that I don't know about, but the money is being spent and appears to be there. So as of right now, the financial picture in the athletic department appears to be pretty good at UCLA.
You mentioned Chip Kelly. There have been some disappointment with his start. How wide a berth is he going to get?
You know, I really think that this is going to be a make-or-break year for him, and I never would have imagined going into it that we would get to this point. But I think that, you know, with the attendance being a record low at the Rose Bowl last year and you know, donation losses corresponding with that, it really is going to kind of reach a critical mass where it's going to cost more to keep him than to jettison him unless they can get a real turnaround next year. And to me, that's, you know, not necessarily a 6-win Las Vegas Bowl season, but I think they really need to set a baseline of 8 wins, because when you look at the 2021 schedule, they've got LSU, and then they flip back to Oregon and Washington in the North rotation, which is much tougher than the other two schools. So this, to me, is really a season that's going to make or break Chip Kelly at UCLA.
Do you feel like he's close to a breakthrough, or there were some nice moments at the second half against Washington State for sure, but there were some troubling moments too?
Yeah, you know, it's just so hard to say. I mean, their quarterback play has been so inconsistent with Dorian Thompson-Robinson, who has tremendous upside, but just can't seem to, you know, put a string of good games together. You know, they lost their tremendous running back, Josh Kelly. They're going to lose some guys early to the NFL draft. Their recruiting was good but not great, and they left some gaps that need to be filled. You know, and one thing that really has still stood out to me is that I don't know what the identity of this team is 2 years into the Chip Kelly era. You know, on offense, it's a tight end heavy multiple set where he's endlessly tinkering. And on defense, they've just been atrocious. You know, they've been one of the worst defenses 2 years in a row. And as of now, they're going forward with Jerry Azzanaro, the defensive coordinator, which is prompting a lot of head-scratching around campus. So, you know, it really is kind of a situation where I don't know if they can turn it around based on the evidence that's kind of unfolding around me.
Nick Aliotti's available. Maybe Chip should bring him on in.
Yeah, you know, he was the DC in the last Rose Bowl year, so that would prompt a lot of good reminders on campus.
I keep hearing that, you know, when Chip walked through the door, they were so young, and then, you know, he only went to the tight end heavy thing because that's all he had. But at some point, you got to have an identity and recruit to that identity. What do they want to be?
Well, you know, he did say that he wanted to play to the strengths of the tight ends, as you mentioned there, but, you know, they're thinning out in that department. They just lost another guy today to the transfer portal. In fact, they've got 10 guys in there now, which seems an awful lot to me. But you know, and they lost probably their best tight end, who was supposed to come back. Devin Asiasi said he's going to the NFL draft. So you know, they're not really tight end heavy anymore, and it'll be interesting to see if they evolve into something, you know, not necessarily the blur, because Chip has endlessly said that he's not going back to that and wants us to stop asking about that, but they need to evolve something maybe a little bit closer to that as opposed to this, you know, tight end heavy sets that have really kind of had mixed success here these first 2 years.
How annoyed does he get when you say, you know, how about the blur?
Yeah, we should make a video montage of his annoyance with me, because it would be pretty funny. There's quite a few clips of that.
But that's the thing. He's hired to be Chip Kelly. You can't suddenly say, all right, I'm not going to be Chip Kelly. I'm going to run this tight end focused offense. Nobody wants to buy a ticket to see a tight end focused offense.
Yeah, you know, one of the things that's interesting is I go back and think about when he was hired was that, you know, some of the people who were there in that room with him at the time have said that he really didn't talk much about football. And I'm thinking, well, you needed to know about football. So maybe you didn't do your due diligence and you just assumed that, you know, it was going to be a certain thing. And then he turned out and did something very different. So, you know, I think that's kind of coming back to bite UCLA a little bit, in that there were some assumptions made and that they just thought they were going to get the Oregon Chip Kelly, and that certainly hasn't been the case.
Ben Bulch, LA Times, covers UCLA, does a great job with it. Great follow on Twitter, is with us. Ben, Oregon wins the Rose Bowl, has 30 kids from Southern California. Your colleague Bill Plachke just blistered USC and UCLA over that. How big of a story is that for UCLA football, that Oregon is put a stake in the ground down there?
Yeah, it's a huge ongoing story, just the recruiting battles. You know, as if UCLA wasn't struggling enough, now you've got Oregon coming in and taking all of these incredibly gifted players that, you know, traditionally have gone to USC and UCLA. So it's just kind of another stake in the heart of Chip Kelly's efforts to get this thing turned around, that not only, you know, are they not doing a great job in their own right, but that they're having to ward off the tremendous efforts of Oregon now coming in here and taking so many players away.
Now, I think if you had said that during, like, the heyday of UCLA football or USC football, there would have been a lot of anger from within the coaching staff. Mario Cristobal saying, this is our home territory, when they're down there that week. Did Chip Kelly and the Bruins staff flinch at that, or were they asked about that?
Yeah, you know, we haven't talked to him since there was no bowl game for UCLA. We haven't talked to him since signing day. But, you know, I think that if I could kind of read between the lines, I would think that they would say, you know, we can kind of control our own destiny in recruiting. And certainly, you know, Oregon might be an attractive fit for a certain type of player. But the guys that we want to go after, who are both, you know, high character, high academics, and good football players, we're still going to be able to do well with them, but the facts remain that they really haven't so far. So it's been a little bit of a disconnect between what they said they were going to be able to do and what they've done.
All right, so you've asked for Gene Block at UCLA. You've been unsuccessful to this point of getting in touch with him. You keep getting blocked. And if you get Gene Block and you get a chance to ask the leader at UCLA, the chancellor at UCLA, some questions, What is it you want to know?
Well, you know, under Dan Guerrero, they've been to no Rose Bowls since 1998. I believe his first year was 2002. And somebody just sent me a message saying that basically it was seven Rose Bowls in the 20 years before Guerrero and zero since. So, given that and the fact that, you know, basketball hasn't won anything since the 95 season, do you want to maintain this trajectory, or do you want to make a radical shift and maybe get away from, you know, somebody inside the UCLA family? Because Dan Guerrero, as people up there may or may not know, was a second baseman on the baseball team in the 70s and, you know, had a lifelong love of the Bruins. And UCLA traditionally has kept it kind of in the family, so to speak. And now maybe there's a thought that they need to go in a different direction and get somebody who has a history of making big-time hires in football on basketball, because Dan Guerrero came from UC Irvine, where they obviously don't have a football team. So that's kind of the number one thing, is do they want to make a fundamental shift in the way they operate, or do they want to kind of keep it as business as usual of, you know, doing really well in kind of the Olympic sports and raising money you know, keeping things the way they are.
It's a kind of a lost opportunity for UCLA because USC has been down, and you'd think the Bruins would have risen up in this stretch and been that program that takes advantage of things, and they just haven't.
Yeah, you know, we saw a little bit in the early Jim Mora years where it seemed like maybe they were on the brink of doing that. You know, won those three games in a row in the crosstown rivalry, and then as quickly as they came up, they plummeted back down again, and really haven't recovered. I'm writing a story that's going to post here in a couple hours about how this is kind of the dark ages for UCLA sports, with four consecutive losing seasons in football for the first time since the 1920s. And obviously basketball is on the verge of missing the tournament for the second consecutive year, and really, you know, has become irrelevant in March. So it really is kind of a down period for UCLA that might be unprecedented, especially in the modern era, and the fans just really are really unhappy and really don't see better days in sight right now.
Keep asking good questions and seeking answers. Ben Bulch, thank you, man.
Anytime, John. I appreciate it.
There he is from the LA Times, Ben Bulch, who is trying to get some answers from Gene Block. Like, this isn't crazy, like, gotcha journalism stuff. The University of California, Los Angeles, is a public university. Benefits from public funding, has a whole bunch of donors that are interested in what's going on at UCLA. And Gene Block, the chancellor at UCLA, who is old guard. It's Michael Crow at Arizona State, it's Gene Block at UCLA, and it was Dr. Edward Ray at Oregon State as the three most passionate supporters of Larry Scott, in part because I think they were there when Larry delivered the original change, expansion in the Pac-12, some things he did that were good a decade ago. They were there, they remember it. The new president's coming in, all they know are, hey, we only got $29 million of funding per university from our television deal. How much did the Big Ten get? Oh, $50 million? How much is the SEC going to get with their new deal? $54 million? The Pac-12 is so far behind. And it doesn't kill UCLA. It doesn't even kill Oregon. Because UCLA, Washington, USC, Oregon, they all kind of have a way to find money if they need it. Oregon makes one phone call. UCLA's got a donor base. Washington has a donor base. USC has a donor base. Stanford does too. But it's everybody else at the conference that really gets punished. So one of the great mysteries in the Pac-12 is that in this era of financial disadvantage, Oregon has risen up. That makes sense to me. Washington has risen up. That makes sense to me. Utah has risen up. That even makes sense to me with their donor base. But what makes no sense at all to me is the fact that UCLA and USC have just kind of been non-factors. This is a time when they should be shining. Leave it here. Coming up, a guy got fired for something he tweeted. We'll talk about it next. Social media can be a dangerous place. Can be tricky. It's a minefield. I think especially if you are somebody who didn't grow up with Twitter or Instagram, you're probably more prone to lapses. But I saw a case of a guy over the Christmas holiday who got fired for a tweet. Now, getting fired for a tweet, Roseanne Barr got fired for a tweet, right? There's a school teacher in Colorado who apparently was high. Got fired for a tweet. She tweeted out, "I'm stoned. Maybe I should try teaching school like this." The school went, "What?" And fired her. There's a guy working at one of those oil change shops in Texas who tweeted out that he needed a joint. Stopped by the Mr. Lube, and he got fired by Mr. Lube. But you tell me, did this guy deserve to be fired? Here's the latest. Apparently in Winona, Minnesota, a man who complained on social media about his company's holiday gift is now fired. His company, which is called Fastenal, It is a construction and industrial product company that makes millions of dollars in revenue. And, you know, it's a big company in Minnesota by their standards. He reportedly tweeted, quote, "What kind of billion-dollar company gifts its employees barbecue sauce as a holiday gift? Yet the employees in the rest of the United States stuff their face with an actual holiday gift box," end quote. His employer gave him barbecue sauce and a grill scraper. They gave that to every employee. He is tweeting about it. He's upset. And he's now fired. Should he have been fired?
I mean, no. But, like, it's kind of poor form to be complaining about something that you're worried, like, about
it's a gift.
Right.
Don't look a gift horse in the mouth.
Right.
You know?
Get what you get. Don't throw a fit.
Yeah.
I'll go ahead and crack out my useless management degree and endless Bureau of Labor and Industry training here. It's questionable. Legally, it's questionable. Unless he's a contract employee and has a clause in his contract, in general, you are allowed to criticize your place of work within reason on social media. I've worked at places where it's like, don't mess with that. You're allowed to be an aggrieved employee.
Yeah. The company is saying that he violated their policy on social media posts and embarrassed the company.
Well, I'm sure he did. It doesn't mean what
he
did was illegal.
They're letting him go. I remember one time, I do think it's kind of petty. Let's just start there. Is it petty to give barbecue sauce in a scraper?
Yes.
Should have given nothing.
What if it was like gourmet barbecue sauce? Because I love some sauce.
Give me the $10.
Hey, buddy, thanks for all your 50 hours a week of work and all those extra things you do. Here's a scraper for your grill and some barbecue.
Some people don't get anything.
I know, but I almost think nothing would have been better.
No, give me some sauce.
You're a sauce queen, though. I've heard, what's the worst Christmas gift an employer has ever given? Because I can think of one. So I got a coffee cup, and it was only trumped by one time my dad. I said to my dad, what did you get from your company for Christmas? He got a coffee cup with some jelly beans in it. And, you know, here he is making these big deals for his company. They gave him jelly beans and a coffee cup. It was insulting. Like, the coffee cup is insulting. Like, give me nothing. I'd rather have nothing. How about a turkey instead of some barbecue? Give me a frozen turkey. But
yeah,
you like
totally.
Barbecue.
I'm good with the barbecue. I mean, yeah. But I mean, I'm not hard to please. So, like, if it's a gift, like, come on.
Worst gift that you've been given by your employer? 503-417-7575. I'll tell you what this company, Alpha Media, did way back in the day. And I'm not going to get fired for this. They gave Christmas tree ornaments. This like goes way beyond the management that's here. I've been here longer than anybody, except for maybe Lars Larson. They gave Christmas tree ornaments as Christmas gifts. And I think almost none of the employees took them. Because it was like, they didn't want to be reminded of their work while they're putting their Christmas tree up at home. Like, come on, take me away from it. This is vacation.
Well, you weren't here, but they did have candy canes on the red counter. And they were kale flavored.
Do not get me started on that.
And
what?
Like ham
that,
flavored.
That was not like a company gift, though.
No.
No, but it was still on the red counter.
Did you eat anything they put on the red counter?
Sometimes.
Yeah.
If it has a wrapper on it.
Wait, what happened with the... I wasn't here. What happened with the candy canes?
So, there were candy canes on the red counter, and not just like, oh, made with kale. It's faux healthy. Kale-flavored candy
That's
canes.
That's no good.
That is horrible.
That's horrible. But see, for people who don't know, you've never been in this building, the vast majority of you, there is a long kind of chest-high red counter that is in a common area to all of the six stations here at PacWest Center up on the sixth floor with all the studios. And what happens is anything that you have that you just want to get rid of, instead of sending out a big email about it, you just set it on that red counter. You know, you have an old stopwatch that doesn't work, you set it on the red counter. You have a stapler that doesn't work, I've got a bunch of kids' toys at home, I bring it in, I set it on the red counter, they disappear. I've seen things on the red counter and I'm like, oh, my five-year-old would love that. And I grab it. So that red counter is kind of like a free-for-all counter. That's not an employee gift, but putting a kale, candy cane? No.
And ham. It was kale and ham.
That's gross.
I know.
That's and people took them away? They disappeared.
Look, at least the kale, there were two slots that were empty. I've heard a rumor that...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.